This is a production of Cornell University.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today, Wednesday, October 3rd, meeting of the Employee Assembly. It is 12:21 p.m. I'll call the meeting to order. First, are there any late additions to the agenda for today?
I have two minor points.
Sure.
The veterinary new dairy barn is open. It does have a conference room.
Wow.
Maybe not easy walk for anybody, but maybe a carpool time sometime in the summer. And it is open for tours and stuff, too, if anyone has an interest in that. And secondly, the veterinary college is starting a staff committee in response to the employee survey.
Great. Okay. Before we jump in and introduce our guest, Paul, I want to let you know that we have a reporter from the Daily Sun who has been with us often in the past, and he's joining us again today to cover the meeting. I will move approving the minutes down till after Paul talks with us, and we'll jump right in. So I asked Paul to join us earlier this semester after we had talked a little bit about what had happened with kind of the change in the Health Now benefit and employees kind of getting questions about that. So he's here today to kind of talk to us about what's coming, what's going to be announced with benefits for next year, and is happy to take our questions. So. Paul, do you want us to introduce, or are you?
No,
I'll
be fine.
Okay.
Yeah. It's trying to remember all the names.
Well, we've got our little.
So it's just as well. I have no particular. I don't have a PowerPoint presentation. I have no particular order in which I want to treat anything, and certainly endowed healthcare plans are a topic of conversation when open enrollments come around. But at a fairly high level, I'd like to just deal with things that affect everybody around the table. We have an open enrollment period coming up, and just so you either recall or for your own information if you haven't taken advantage of this before, is November is the endowed open enrollment. The contract college folks very, very seldom also have their open enrollment in November because we have to wait until the state decides what rates they're going to charge for the health care plan, and then the state holds its own open enrollment that they call the option transfer period that you can move around between plans during that period of time. And so everybody in the room needs to be aware that there is some kind of an opportunity to move things if you're interested in your health care plan. But you want to pay particular attention this year if you're in select benefits or any of the folks in your departments are in select benefits. And that's over 3,000 people around campus on the health reimbursement account side of select benefits. First thing I want to mention is we're no longer calling it select benefits, because we are the only institution in the whole world that calls it something other than what everybody else in the whole world calls it, which is flexible spending accounts. And we have new employees coming here, and sometimes they'll just look and say, don't you have flexible spending accounts? And we got to say, well, yes, we do, but we call it something different. And there's no reason to call it something different. So we're going to call it what the rest of the world calls it, starting now, it's flexible spending accounts. That's not that big of a change. It's a much bigger change is that we're switching vendors. With Workday coming up, we finally have the ability to move away from a poorly functioning vendor that has been giving us a hard time for a while, but we simply haven't had the opportunity to move away from them because there are all these computer connections. And our priority to get computer connections fixed has always been down in the basement. So we had to be patient and wait. And I thank you for waiting. We have a group that I think is a national leader in this area. They are well-proven in higher education as well as in other places. Recently, they were bought out by Aetna about 2 years ago, which makes another connection for us because they're part of the Aetna family. And that means we're going to be dealing with the same account people, the same administrators, and have actually more leverage over them than we would just as a flexible spending account customer because we've got all of our health plans with us too. So we're going to be, I think, in much better shape with respect to that. This company actually runs a credible debit program, so we're going to be able to issue a debit card for people who are in the medical reimbursement account, and it'll make it a lot easier for you to take that debit card out of your wallet and pay the copays that you need to pay at doctors or dentists or eye doctors or to get prescription lenses or any of the other things that you've used in the past, the flexible spending account dollars that you set aside from your own paycheck. The company also has a great phone app. So you can literally take a picture of the receipt that you get and hit the app. It'll send it off to them, get your claim that just filed. And then you can go back into that phone app and check your account values and see where it's going, and you set up with them to automatically put your money into your checking account, and they will do all of that within a very brief period of time. Now, Aon hasn't even dreamed of this yet. So getting PayFlex, which is the name of the company that we'll be using, we hope is going to be a great leap forward. But this is going to be a change. It's going to be a transition period of time because PayFlex is taking over everything starting January 1st. That means Aon's completely out of the picture. Normally, Aon would keep going through the summer, the spring, into the summer, to handle all old claims and everything that are submitted by April 30th. They're cut off. They're gone. PayFlex will be doing everything. Now, we emphasize this in the open enrollment materials, but we're asking people to honor a blackout period. If you have claims that you're getting ready to submit, do it before December 10th. Then there's a blackout period for the rest of the year, and then starting in January, you can start sending stuff to PayFlex. But they've got to be able to have the time to take all of the files out of PayFlex and move it over into out of Aon and move it over into the PayFlex system, so PayFlex then is up and running, and they recognize how much money you put in for the year, how much you've taken out, all the stuff that Aon is supposed to be keeping track of. That should be okay. Now, I know there will be people that still submit claims. Aon will be sending claims back to the people saying, we no longer take them, send them off to PayFlex. Hopefully that will be enforced with some of them. But there's no controlling people's impressions about what the right thing is to do, particularly as you get close to the deadline. Last year we had two people send off their claims to Aetna to help us, and were completely flummoxed and upset that they had misread it and sent it to Aetna, who has never handled our select benefits before. So we understand that we have to do a lot of hand-holding and a lot of helping out. Anybody, anytime, needs help, on our website or give us a call during business hours. We're there to help. We've got a dedicated customer service crew who know the answers, and they can, or they will find out and they can get back to people. Don't assume.
Is this information going out to people now?
Yes. Going out like this. You'll be getting one of these in the mail if you're in Dow fairly soon.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't sent out packages for a while. Normally we just send out a postcard and say it's up on the web, go take a look at it. But there are enough changes this year that we really wanted to make sure that these got into the homes of everybody. And we'll be seeing these around the end of October once they get through the final approval and printing and everything else that needs to be done. And that includes the information on PayFlex. And for endowed folks, it's the next topic that I'm going to get to, which is the healthcare plan. Any questions on flexible spending?
Well, first on the Cornell employees leave money on the table at the end of the calendar year.
Off the top of my head, I can't give you that exact number. I know what it is. Back in
dollars? Okay. Because is that something that for this transition that really needs to be communicated in? Because I know it's definitely the individual subscribers, but, you know, as people hedge their copays and dentist balance billing and so forth, that's a big thing. It's a federal ball, not a Cornell thing, making sure that people really know when that blackout time happens of how much they need to commit so they don't lose any of that direct.
Well, there is an extension period that the IRS set up several years ago. We took immediate advantage of it. So people have 45 days from the end of the year.
Perfect.
To continue to incur expenses, not just get the paperwork paid. So you can actually, on your 2012 flexible spending account record, you can go in and get dental appointments done, eyeglasses or anything else, all the way up until March 15th, which is 45 days after the beginning of the window. And you still have until April 30th at that point to submit on these claims. April 30th is the drop dead date. No more claims. You know, even if they're legitimate and you've got them well documented, it's too late. We have to close out the fiscal year at the end of the fiscal year. So we have to get it all cleared and moved out. So the blackout period occurs actually kind of toward the end, but not at the very end.
It's great that you have that provision.
The extension is there, and those of you who have been in select benefits for a while, soon to be flexible spending accounts, realize that we send out reminders toward the end of the year telling people, spend your money, we don't want it. But the feds tell you, we're not allowed to give it back to you. We're simply not allowed. It used to be something called zero balance accounts, but people started taking advantage of it. And so they cut them out and they introduced you to the loop. So you're in a very tight situation if you leave money there. There's not a thing I can do. I have to keep it. You know, and it makes employers look bad because we have to keep it. But that's against the law. I think Tonya had her hand up first. Out of fairness, sorry.
just out of curiosity, will PayFlex be the same program we use for child care reimbursement as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just that the debit card doesn't apply to dependent care. It only applies to medical spending.
But it will still be kind of a you submit your claim.
It's still the same way it was before. It's just a new, hopefully more efficient, I hope.
I think anything would be more efficient.
Well, that's my feeling, too. I mean, we've had to put up with them, too, for an awfully long time. I feel bad about that. But, you know, we can only get so much done. There's no way in the world we could have brought on a new vendor 5 or 6 years ago without a computer connection. Because
mm-hmm.
Then you would have had almost nothing. You know, that would be good.
Oh, the amount of the maximum medical reimbursement is changing.
That's right.
What was it changing to?
We had, when Select Benefits was first set up, a very strange arrangement, too, that said that for the medical side, you could put in $6,500. But if you put in up to $5,000 on the dependent care side, that meant that you couldn't put $6,500 on the medical side. It was reduced and you only had $1,500 left. So $5,000 in dependent and $1,500 in medical. Or if you didn't have dependent daycare expenses of any kind, you had the full $6,500 available. So very awkward, very strange. Took a while to get it straight. And we're taking advantage of the new change in federal law to separate those things and not have it that way anymore. So the new law says that starting in January of 2013, the maximum you can put into flexible spending accounts is $2,500. That may or may not be indexed, that's uncertain at this point, meaning next year it could be $2,550 or something like that. But we don't know that they're going to index it. Right now we know it's $2,500 for 2013, and that's the maximum you can put in under the medical side. You can still do $5,000. On the child care side, that's been, I'm afraid to say, and I think the country ought to be a little bit ashamed about this, since 1978, $5,000 in child care expenses. I think they might have bumped it up once, you know, at least during that time. It's $5,000, and that's as much as we can do. Virtually everybody that has a child in daycare, when my kid was little, $5,000 took a pretty big bite out of your daycare. Mm-hmm. In fact, you could get under it fairly easily.
And you have to make that election for your amount in the upcoming
in advance. Mm-hmm. During the open enrollment period or on the contract college side, what we call the option transfer period. That's the open enrollment period for contract college. So there are two separate enrollment periods. And endowed people will be shut down at the end of November, and even though it's open still for contract college people, endowed people can take advantage of that. We're required by law to set definite times, and we do that for each eligible group. And we have to tell you in advance what they are, and then we have to stick to it.
And you have to stick to them, but is there any exceptions made for unforeseen, I mean, sometimes people have illnesses that they just never would have seen and coming, and there's a lot of expenses. Is there an appeal process? Or?
There are a couple of questions in the Q&A that are on the IRS website under Section 125 that you want to visit and see who's being cold-hearted. It ain't me.
Okay, so there's, the answer is no, but it's not you. Okay.
There are no exceptions. I've had people whose family members died 2 or 3 days before, and they meant to hit the deadline, and they missed it, and I've had to say no. You can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
What's the punishment for doing that? Well, the IRS audits you, and we just thought out of, in fact, we haven't even officially closed yet, a 4-year audit that the IRS has been here, looking at our benefit programs particularly, but other kinds of payroll issues as well. They do come, they do audit, they do ask questions, we have to prove stuff, and we can't be showing in our payroll records regular sloppiness around the rules that we offer, or people, they disqualify plans, and that sounds like not much, but if you put $2,500 in your flexible spending account, you don't expect to be taxed and penalized for having done it because I made a mistake. So I don't make mistakes. At least none that the IRS can possibly trick. I'm doing my best there. But we have to protect you in odd ways, and that's what we do. So I want to, I know I don't have other minutes,
go ahead.
So I'm going to go ahead and hit the health care plans. I'll do the easy one first. I have no idea what the state's going to do next year. I have no idea what the premiums are. I have no idea if they're going to change anything. They're going to add things, take away things. They never tell us until the very last minute. We used to even have a conference that a couple of people in my office would go to that the state sponsored so people could get a little bit of an advanced piece about plan changes and things. And because of budget cuts, they cut that out. So now we really are in the dark until the day that they post the rates up on the website. And that means from about mid-November on, my staff goes in and checks their website 2 or 3 times a day. Because they also don't tell you when they're going to do this. So this is what we have. You know, it's a grab bag. We can't say what's going to happen. The state has always offered a very good health insurance plan. People like it who are in it, more or less. We've got some problems here locally because local docs don't like it because it doesn't reimburse much. So the number of docs who participate in that plan, the Empire plan, is lower than any of the endowed plans by a considerable margin. But in the rest of New York, it's pretty solid. I really don't think the state government cares if it's okay in New York City and Albany, then everybody else is just fine. I've actually had people tell me that. You know, literally, with this gesture. Well, out there in the country, welcome to Wichita. I just want to slap it, you know, but that's what we
have. I'll back you up on that.
They don't care.
They don't.
So we try to bring what we can bring, and we try to bring it as fast as we possibly can to folks. The contract college people will be getting their own piece that looks like this, but not at the end of October, because we don't know when it's going to happen. But it's already, it will be at that point, all ready to go except the rates that we'll plug in right quick, print it up, and send it out as fast as we possibly can. People will know that. But the state also sends out stuff, and it's on the state website, the Department of Civil Service website. On the endowed side, back in May, we finalized the decision that we really needed to get away from a fairly inefficient and poorly regarded third-party administrator, as they're called in my business. It's an insurance program run for the insurance company, Health Now New York, which came in with a blaze back in 1999. We thought that they were going to do good things. They were going to revolutionize the way healthcare is being delivered, and they were going to have new contacts with docs and all this other sort of thing that would make healthcare easier to do and better for people. And they were talking about early applications on the web and everything else. But they delivered none of that. I've literally had to beg the docs to keep HealthNow on for the last year or two to make so they don't start dropping away from the network pretty strongly. until we could get Workday in and we could actually get a new computer connection and everything and have things on course now. We brought in Health Now because Aetna was founded. Aetna was in a merger with a company that was called U.S. Healthcare, and as it turned out, U.S. Healthcare swallowed Aetna, was the other way around, and they had a really hard time with their mainline businesses. And so we brought in Health Now as competition. And that seemed to work for a year or two. Trouble is that Aetna kind of got its legs going again, got up on its feet, started running, and they were improving and doing really good things, where Health Now kind of languished and fell off the side. So we're back now to a situation where we're going with a much stronger vendor. They're much better administratively. One example of that, consistently for the past 3 years, after having trouble 2 years before that, Aetna has passed our claims audit with flying colors. They're doing a good job. Health Now, they've had 5 claims audits. They failed every one of them. And it's always for the same reasons. And they always promise they're going to go back and fix their system. And they always come back with the same problems, the same claims issues. You can only put up with this inefficiency so long as it's costing us and you money who are involved in the Health Now plan. Their network is not good. All across the country, they've been renting and patching together networks, and they have to do this because although they're a Blue Cross and Blue Shield company over in Buffalo, they're out of area here. Excellus is Blue Cross and Blue Shield here. So they can't be the Blue Card company here in central New York. They had to piece together a network around the country. Their network is nowhere near as good as Aetna. And so we're replacing that. One example of that is Weill Cornell Medical College. Aetna now has about 84% of the clinical practicing doctors at the Weill Cornell Medical College. That's up. They've been doing a really good job of recruiting. Health Now had fewer than 50% because they had a rented network. And I know, because I know the docs there, I know the doc administrators that run their what they call their physician organization, managed care office, and they were, you know, down near the bottom in terms of how much the Weill Cornell docs like this particular network, their responsiveness and their ability to do things. So for a whole host of reasons, Health Now had outlived its usefulness. We were down to Aetna. We could have picked up another vendor if we wanted to, but that's really not where the market is going. We've got so many changes that are pending out there in with national health reform and how it's going to affect Cornell and other major employers. It's a lot better for us, all of us, to work with one vendor that's really on its game and out ahead of the pack. If you notice from time to time, you will see that Aetna is growing, that its per share value is increasing. They're doing the right things out there for the right reasons. Companies like that do not gain in shareholder value year over year, quarter over quarter, without being fairly highly regarded. They are in the vanguard, along with United Healthcare and Cigna, in doing a lot of things that the Affordable Care Act is recommending that they do as far as insurance companies. So we feel that we've picked a good partner. We've been with Aetna for almost 30 years. So we know them well, and at the same time, we've negotiated a deal where the Weill Cornell Medical College employees are also now going over to Aetna as an exclusive third-party administrator starting in January. That greatly increases the number of people we have as customers, and our administrative fees are going to fall dramatically. It's saving us about $250,000 a year. It's saving Weill Cornell almost $500,000 a year in terms of just administrative fees. Not claims and the discounts and everything that we will see from Aetna, which are greater and better in most instances than Health Now, just as an example. So that's working out very nicely, where we've got for all of Cornell one vendor, and we're going to be able to coordinate with this. Aetna also has some new improved tools online that I think you will see that you will learn to appreciate. And we'll be introducing those more because I'm not sure about Go Live with Workday. We don't want to pile too much stuff on there. So we're going to wait and see how things work out. But next spring, we're hoping to introduce more web-based alternatives for folks in terms of finding things through the Aetna website. But if you go to Aetna.com and look up the Aetna Navigator, go through our website, you'll get to our customized Navigator site, and I think you'll begin to see some changes over time as to what you're doing with regard to Aetna. Track your claims electronically. The healthcare rates were a bit tricky this year because we've got 3,000 people in health now who are not going to be in health now anymore. The other 3,000 people that are covered under the Aetna plans currently may or may not stay where they are, and certainly the health now people need to move someplace. And we're hoping that in November they take the time to think about what it is they want and do their election online. That's important because if they do that, then they're guaranteed to get their information to Aetna, and they will get their ID cards by January 1. If they decide instead that, well, I'm not going to do that because it says in this material that if I don't do anything, I'm going to be automatically put into the Aetna PPO as a default option. Well, that's going to be a manual process. Now, we're going to have to download them. Not entirely manual. We're a little bit beyond the hammer and chisel. So we'll be bringing it down into a spreadsheet. We have to double check it, move them over into PeopleSoft, and one of the last runs going over out of PeopleSoft. And we also have to duplicate it and put it into Workday to make sure that it's in there too. And it could delay. I'm not saying it will, but it could, which means that there could be a delay in coverage and they may not get their coverage cards until later on in January. The coverage is there. You know, there's no lapse. It's just if you get it in the first time and get it in right, then you're assuring yourself that you're going to have your cards and things will go smooth. If you don't, then there's going to be a delay. And whose fault is it? I don't know. Mine. Okay? But it doesn't matter. You still have a delay, and that's not good. And I want to encourage people to, and ask you to do the same, to encourage people to make that election and figure out what you want to do. There are three Aetna plans. I'm just going on and on. I'm sorry.
No, this is good.
No, we're good. Please interrupt me. I was promised myself I'd talk for 10 minutes, and then I shut up. I'm sure I'm at least a minute or two over that. So the three plans that you'll have available to you on the endowed side are the Aetna PPO, and that program is practically an identical copy of the Health Now plan. Only the Alpha Network is actually a little bit better. It reimburses at 80% instead of 70%. But it's virtually the same thing. That's why we picked it for the default, because people would at least have the same plan design. They would understand, yeah, if I go in-network, I save money. If I go out of network, I don't save money. And we're pretty good about that. We pinch pennies here on campus, because we have well over 92% of our folks go in-network for all of their care. So I know people pay attention to this, and that's great, because the discounts are much better in that way. The second plan is a Cornell program for healthy living. That's an Aetna PPO. It's the same thing. There's only one difference, and that is that there's an enhanced wellness exam that is added into the Aetna PPO. So it's the same nationwide network. You can use any Aetna network doctor, but if you want to do the extended wellness exam, I had one on Monday of this week. Took an hour. My doctor took with me. I'm in reasonably good health. He's been working with me. My numbers have been going in all the right directions. Things are working fine. I still had an hour with him. You know, they talk to you. They look over the results of your health risk exam. We are paying these guys more money to do this. Okay, so it's not out of the goodness of their heart and how thrilled they are that you are interested in your health. We're giving them more money to do this kind of special thing. But it's a special arrangement. It's only for the folks here in Ithaca, meaning the docs here in Ithaca who have signed on for it. This is not an easy thing to set up. It took us 2 years to get it up and running, just here with the people that we have. Outside of the extended of wellness exam, we are also greatly expanding the preventive care that you can get with any primary care doctor anywhere in the country that's in the Aetna network. The Affordable Care Act is mandating for plans starting in 2014, and that certain preventive treatments and exams are to be provided free of charge to members of employer health plans. And we're proud with the Cornell Program for Healthy Living. We've been doing this. We invented this in 2006. They did. So we've been moving in the right direction with the help of the docs, designing this program and putting it up and running. And as they bring in new preventive measures, we're adding them to the Cornell Program for Healthy Living. So you don't have to be here in Ithaca and go to a special doc for anything but the enhanced wellness exam. If you saw in the newspaper the task force on women's health, there were 8 new categories of things that have to be provided by new plans in 2014. We were doing that in 2013 with the Cornell Program for Healthy Living, zero copay. You'll see it outlined in here when it comes to it. So you don't have to live in Ithaca, you don't have to use an Ithaca dog to get better coverage for wellness than you do any other two plans. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I do. Can you give a few examples of what you mean by preventive health, what's covered under preventive health?
Well, one thing that you have in the SFPPO is that if you're above age 19, then you get a routine physical exam every 2 years, and you pay a copay, $20, to get that done. Cornell Program for Healthy Living this year and next year, too, you get that every year with no copay. It doesn't cost you anything. Because we've adopted the preventive task force's recommendations ever since 2010, when they first got started. So all of 2011 and all of 2012, we've had certain things, and we keep adding them as they keep coming up. So that's one thing. There are going to be a number of other things, immunizations, certain preventive medicines are going to be available with no copay in 2013, whereas now if you have a preventive medicine, that's fine. But we used to ask, and we still do ask for the other plans, is it generic, is it a brand, is it off our preferred list? And you have a three-level pricing system that you deal with, encouraging you to go with generics because it's only $5 instead of $20. So that's for the brand. So some of these things will be that. We're still waiting on a complete list because this guidance came from the Department of Health and Human Services just recently, and Medco, our prescription drug card company, is busy pulling all of this together. And it includes, particularly in the women's health sense, some over-the-counter drugs that you're going to be able to get. Over-the-counter equipment as well as some medicine that you're going to be able to get through this. But it has to be by prescription in order to get the zero copay, in other words, free.
How about things like massage or acupuncture or any of the alternatives?
No, those are not.
Are preventive.
One of the aspects of the Accountable Care Act is that we are going to be paying a fee, as all other employers do next year, of $1 per member per month to fund the program that they're calling it the I'll think of the name of it here soon. But one of the great controversies that's been going on in medicine over the last few years is what is effective, what really works, what's scientifically proven, or what is evidence-based medicine, and what is not. And various things, a number of them that you mentioned, have already run through the National Complementary and Alternative Medicine Center in the Institutes of Medicine of the federal government and have not been proven to be effective, but they're moving one step further in trying to do that. I see the smile and I know what you're thinking. I won't, on your behalf, and I don't think you'd want to either, spend endowment money on items that we don't think are really going to work. You know, I mean, this is healthcare insurance, this is important. There are expenditures that are responsible, and then there are expenditures that may be desirable, may be worthwhile, may be good for relieving stress and other kinds of things that I think there are other ways of handling. But within the healthcare arena, we're talking about very serious premiums taken out of people's paychecks that we try to keep to an absolute minimum to provide the best possible care that evidence based and is provided for those who need it when they need it and in full measure when they need it. If we added everything that everybody wanted to do, regardless of whether or not it was proven, your healthcare premiums would go very high and there would be a lot of use out there that you really couldn't trace back. So I take a very firm stand on this. I'm concerned about it. You know, massage therapy and other kinds of unproven therapies in terms of medical outcomes and evidence-based medicine, they're just fine. I'm not saying that these people ought to be banished from the earth, but I think there needs to be a really strong line between what your healthcare plan will pay for and what you may need to pay for over on the side if you feel that it's good therapy for you in the way that you want. So no, those are not a part, not even close to the Preventive Task Force on Preventive Medicine that comes out of the National Institutes of Health. Yeah, they're not recommended. So we're not coming.
Chiropractic services are also unproven.
That's a matter of controversy. Currently, chiropractic services have been covered under our plan for over 20 years.
What about?
But they are monitored, like everything else, around medical necessity. That means surgeons are monitored. That means all your primary care and secondary care docs have to show that the therapy that they are suggesting is medically necessary and that there has to be a certain level of improvement. Where you see that particularly is in mental health, where your mental health provider has to certify that you really are making some progress as you go forward.
The fact of the matter is that they'll cut off that therapy after 20 sessions.
Okay.
You can appeal the decision to do that, but it won't work.
And what about...
I've been there for the past 3 years trying to get help that way.
Physical therapy...
It's the same measure of medical necessity. So who you pick as a provider is up to you. Sometimes things are going to be covered, sometimes they're not going to be covered based on the judgment of medical necessity, which by law now is not just appealed through Aetna. It has to be appealed to an outside agency. They have to employ two completely independent outside agencies who review the medical. You have the right for any denied claim to do two levels of appeal in Aetna. And then you have another level of appeal, and at random, one or the other of these outside agencies that are staffed by medical professionals review all the records and can overturn that or support it, depending on the evidence presented. So it's all built around medical necessity. Yes,
so just because I know we're getting close to running out of time here. But I think a question that hasn't been asked, but you threw out the word premium a couple of times. So
yeah.
Do we have a sense yet what our rates will look like? Is that something that you can share with us, or is that not something that's...
Well, it's going to be in the paw print on Friday.
Okay.
So it's hard to, you know, every plan has a little bit different premium
mm-hmm.
structure, and they're being charged something different based
okay.
on experience within the plan. And as I introduced, but really didn't finish the concept a few minutes ago, that with 3,000 people moving out of health now, we've had to do some actuarial juggling to try to figure out, well, where are these people likely to end up? What kind of medical history are they bringing with them? What effect might that have on a projected basis on the plan that's out there that they may join? So it took a little bit of that, a little bit longer than we normally take to come up with those rates. But they'll be on Friday. You can check them. They'll be in the paw print. Paw print might come out electronically before Friday. I don't really know the complications for sure. But it's going to be announced very soon.
So just a question, do we benchmark studies of like competing schools and how our premiums and plans are?
Competing universities?
Yeah.
We look at regional, we look at Northeast and national for all industries, and then we also look at institutions of higher education.
Are we self-funded on our side of that?
We are.
And behind the scenes, is our med loss ratio trending on up or down?
Everybody's med loss ratio has gone up or down.
Okay. And the stop losses, are we adjusting our stop losses higher?
We do not have stop loss coverage. We're picking up some losses.
We're writing every check for every claim.
That's exactly right.
You're not going to stop loss.
Okay. The premiums that you put into the plan and the premiums Cornell puts in the plan, those pay claims and administrative expenses on the part of Aetna starting in 2013. if when we set the premiums, we guess wrong and the plan costs us more than what the total premiums are that we projected, it comes out of Cornell's pocket, and then we go back to the table and figure out again for next year. But there's no insurance backing us up. We've been self-insuring this 100% for up to 2 decades.
Okay.
So I think we've got Greg, and we've got Gemma, and then I think we have to wrap.
Yes.
Sit
on the safe side. And you said you can't, you know, you have to do with a rate or anything, but I'm wondering if you could ever negotiate something for, we want a two-family plan, and we have to buy a whole family or a single.
You know, that may seem like a you're suffering less than you think. Because when we go back into the demographics, the average family size that's on the contract college is 2.8 people. Okay. So you're covering two, and when you average out all the families, most people that have coverage are single. And then the next is the family coverage, as you know, that when you average just the families in there, it's 2.8. So the single people are out. That doesn't bring down the number. It's just the average number. It's virtually the same number on the outside. So it's not like the average family size is 4 or 5 or 6, and you really feel, you know, like you're being taken to the laundry here. But you're not, actually. There aren't that many big families. 20 years ago, yeah. There are some. I understand that. It doesn't affect your numbers, really.
My question was just on the medical necessity. Do we decide as Cornell what benefits we're going to offer that we determine that are out of medical necessity, or is that something that Aetna says we're not going to provide these benefits out of medical necessity?
We offer a very full range of medical procedures, treatments of various kinds. There are very few things that we don't cover that are in evidence-based medicine and that aren't part of what the various medical associations say are required. So when we're wondering about pediatric treatment, we go to the American Academy of Pediatrics, and they say what they feel is reasonable and evidence-based kind of treatment for kids. So, you know, same thing for the Surgical Association, for eye doctors, you know, all the way around. Aetna gathers all this information, so we pay them to do. So when it comes around to adjudicating a claim, medical necessity is not so much about what treatment is going to be offered or not offered to everybody. It's more about what do you need and is it the right thing for you to do. So there are docs out there that may say, I want you to skip over two other standard step therapy kinds of treatment and jump into this other treatment here. And Aetna would flag that right away and say, no, wait a minute. You know, that may not be medically necessary to go to the most expensive, the most intense treatment. What about these intermediate steps? And they'll get on the phone to your doc. And if your doc can defend it, and it seems to make sense because of who you are with your medical history and all that, they'll approve it. If not, they'll push back on the doc. And the doc normally will go back and say, well, I understand. We'll go through if that's what you want to do. And they usually grumble. But it's not that much. It's not as much as it used to be. They're getting it now because, and there's one big reason they're getting it, because Medicare is coming down on them like a ton of bricks. So they have to do this step therapy stuff, or they don't get Medicare reimbursement. And they can't afford not to see Medicare patients. So they've changed their practices over the last 25 years that I've been in the business to conform much more closely to Medicare guidelines. And that's what a lot of insurance companies are really following too. The Medicare guidelines, fully informed by the various medical societies that are constantly upgrading their advice on various things, including going the other direction, which can be really controversial. Like, do women really need mammograms younger than age 50? You know, that went over pretty hard. A lot of women didn't like that kind of advice coming out of the Preventive Task Force, but they're sticking by it. you know, and so the society is trying to deal with that now, meaning medical society, and the docs are interpreting things in different ways. So they're gearing up to be able to show the exceptional nature of one or two patients or however many patients they have that they should get, let's say, as an example, in the so it's an interplay that goes on all the time. Nobody has their idea fixed on exactly what's the right thing to do. We're all kind of messing around with it. But at least there are some bounds around it where we demand some scientific accuracy around what treatments are offered. Outside of that, I understand it's full of a gray area, and there are claims out there from established professionals saying that they can do certain things, and until they're proven, it's just not going to be covered. That's kind of the arena that medical necessity works in. So it's flexible.
Thank
and
you.
A lot of it depends on your doctor.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah.
And Joe, I just have one question for you. Are you in the University Benefits Committee?
Yes.
Good. You know you have a meeting tomorrow?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Okay,
so there you go. That was the answer to that question.
Well, that's important because the University Benefits Committee knew over a year ago we were getting rid of health now. Okay. And, you know, that information could have gotten out. We depend on the people that sit in the University Benefits Committee to take it back to their constituent assembly and that sort of thing. So that's your charge, Joe.
Start tomorrow.
Okay.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah,
thank you, Paul.
All right. So moving along back to our meeting minutes from last meeting, does anyone have any additions, changes, corrections to those minutes?
Who wants to go first?
All in favor? Great, thank you. Okay, moving along, a report from the chair. My goodness, now I got to remember what we talked about at the UA. At the last UA meeting, we had a presentation from Ted Dodds, just talking about basically, now I have to remember, that was so long ago, Amy, infrastructure and, sorry? It was a lifetime ago. Just basically kind of giving us an update on CIT, where they're going with infrastructure, talked about the move to Office 365. So I don't know if people have been getting emails, if you have two large emails that you've sent out, having to get rid of those or save them other places. So talked about that move. The UA has also talked about open forum, similar to what we have talked about doing. So they're thinking about doing something similar. What are they talking about? Coffee with the UA or something like that. So they're kind of thinking about getting out there the same way that we are. So that was kind of interesting. Bridget and I also met with Mary on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan. And we talked about going to New York City to see the tech campus. We will not be going to New York City to see the tech campus. Not because she doesn't want us to go to New York City to see the tech campus, but there's not a tech campus really to see at this moment in time. But she did talk about the idea of us connecting with the folks down there and maybe having kind of a virtual tour of kind of what, you know, the mock-ups look like for the buildings and things like that. So that's something that we can talk about doing. We also spent some time talking about the survey results, the president's address. So the president has his talking points. The employee survey committee has put together a final report to Mary, and that's kind of gone over to her now for her review. We haven't had any feedback kind of on the final yet. That only went yesterday. But she is looking forward to coming and meeting with us on the 15th when she comes with David. That is our regular EA meeting time, so 12:15 on the 15th. It's a Monday. So our next meeting is changed from Wednesday to Monday. Location still TBD. So
if anyone has any suggestions for a room?
I've got a couple which we can talk about.
I have
We're trying to find somewhere close to Central Campus for David and Mary's schedule. Okay. Moving on to old business, open forums. We had originally talked about having one in November. The employee survey committees who were going to partner with us on that are thinking that November is a little bit premature since we haven't kind of heard David's feedback yet on what he likes about the proposals or not, so we're going to defer them a little bit later. Something that we might be able to do in November may be an open forum on the new awards and recognition program, since that one seems to be pretty solid. So we'll talk about, I'm waiting to hear back from the folks on that committee to see if they want to do something, but they would be the ones for November if we were to do one. Budget, I think we got an answer. I was going to talk about the live stream of the President's address and see if we wanted to budget some of our funds towards that. And what I found out from Bill is that we don't have to cover that cost. So I don't need to ask you guys to approve the budget amount for that. I don't know, Bob, if you have anything else you want to add about the budget, or maybe when we have some more time we can really... Yeah, so, but that's a cost that will not hit us this year.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bill.
You're welcome.
Employee Celebration Day. So I know a couple folks at our last meeting said that they were willing to participate in that. So just now we have the time. It's 2:30 to 4:30 on Saturday the 13th of October. So I want to get folks, I think we only need, you know, maybe two people there at a time, or people want to come for the whole time. I know I think LaVanya and Jeannie, I think you guys said that you could be there. And the Employee Celebration Day, and that's on Saturday the 13th. You were just going to have a table there.
And when you say there, you mean?
At
Barton Hall.
I'm like.
Okay. Barton Hall?
No, Bartels.
Bartels.
You're not available. Okay. So, Jeannie, it might be me and you.
Okay.
I think Eric and Bridget, I think Eric, you had said you could, but you can't. Yes. Okay, so.
We do need you. But do you need a shirt? You don't have a shirt yet?
I have plenty of my own.
No. That won't do. You need a special red shirt.
Yeah, we have a shirt. Take a look. Tell us how much left they need.
I have a box in my office. I'm not sure what sizes are left, but you're welcome to stop in and see if we can find you whatever size you
want. That may be a determining factor, because I usually require a larger size. They're usually not available. So.
Well, we still want you
to come.
We should have all new EA members go to the Amy to get a shirt.
Once they do their profile for the
key. There you go, leverage.
All right, I'll plan on being there anyway.
Okay. And basically it's just to stand there and answer questions. We'll have meal tickets for everybody. We'll have be able to partake in the nice little luncheon that they offer, or dinner, whatever it is between 2:30 and 4:30. It's, I don't know what it is. Yeah. EA member profile. So, Eric, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, just from the first ones were submitted to fall.
And Nancy only used yours.
She didn't like yours.
She said that yours was good. What did she say? Because she said that yours was nice and long and a good intro one, so she's going to leave it at yours. So she has mine. She said she would run mine the next time.
Oh, okay.
So yours will be in there.
I'm going to get a list of running dates, and we'll have sign-ups for going to two at a time. As Nancy has mentioned, that maybe we should keep it not like what we had for the election profile or anything like that, but as a EA member, what are your visions moving forward, or what committees you're on, how you want to shape the EA and the staff as a whole, you know, think about the major. If you want a good example, read this Friday's call.
And did you say that there's a template of questions or...
I'm still in the process.
Still in the process.
Wording it is probably the best decision.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I had written for mine was, you know, who I am and why I joined the EA, and I said, you know, what I'm working on now that I think is really exciting is this. So, you know, Lavanya, like when you write yours, you can maybe write about something exciting the Education Committee is doing or something, just so they kind of hear more about what we're doing, kind of thing.
And once we have those, I mean, they don't have to come in. If you want, I can put them on Nancy, but if you just want to send them off to Nancy, and she can do the proofreading and then, you know, format it for it.
Yeah, I should copy you anyway, so you know. You don't have to bug it.
Well, I can send an email every day and say, yes, I sent it.
Care Fund auction update. So, Gemma, do you want to talk about it? You want me to talk?
So, Leslie emailed everybody a form. If you could please pass that on to your department or any friends that you know that have business local businesses. We need a strong. The more we're advertising for the auction, the more applications are coming in left and right. People say, oh, yeah, I should buy.
Mm-hmm.
So we're basically out of money. So if everybody could help, that would be great. Either contact Tanya or Leslie, either on ourselves, if you need any help with anything, because we are on the committee to ask people. Does that link show, have the website where it shows what we have so far? So people can
see. Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
I don't think we did. So you might want to ask one. Mm-hmm.
We might be able to figure out how to share that
yeah.
link at least too. But the big thing would be please don't email us and say you should contact so-and-so to see if they'll give a donation. Please contact them. That would be really, really great because we're contacting, I can't even tell you how many people. So if everybody, if you know someone who you think can contact, especially if you know them personally, just shoot them an email and say would you support, and you've got the written letter already.
And it's just going to be an online.
Then the next thing on the agenda is talking points for our meeting with David and Mary. So for those who were here last time, when we met with them last spring, we did something a little different. Usually what we have done in the past is give them a bunch of questions and David kind of comes in and just kind of answers our questions. Last year what we did was had more of an open discussion, and I, for those who were here last year, I just wanted to get your opinion if you preferred one way over the other. There's not too many of us around the table who were here last year, but...
What were we doing last year?
Yeah.
Okay.
So ideally what I'm going to have David do is to come in and say, you know, how's it going? What's going on? I mean, we'll have just had the his address to the staff. He'll have some more, and he'll have read the report on the survey, so he may have more insight and thoughts that he wants to share. But pretty much anything that we want to talk to him about, are there any kind of general topics that we want to discuss with him? I mean, do we want him to talk about the tech campus? Do we want him to talk about the survey?
I'm interested personally, I don't know, I haven't spoken to any of my constituency about it, but I am curious about how all of the economic, the downsizing has, whether their ideas of what the downsizing was supposed to do actually happened, what the ramifications are for all that. 10% cut.
So basically, did the staff reductions or the changes at the university that were implemented over the past couple of years meet the goals?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because yeah. I'm sensing that there's an awful lot of lack of morale, lack of camaraderie amongst people willing to go outside their job descriptions to help one another out. I very frequently run into, well, that's not my job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, I don't know if anybody else runs into that. The cooperation and morale seems to be pretty low because of all the cuts. Oh, I'm too busy to do that, sorry.
think of it.
You do it once, it may become your job forever.
Well,
right. Well, you know, like if I needed help in the past to move a bookshelf in my office and said, hey, would you give me a hand? They're like, no, I'm too busy, or no, that's not in my job description. I don't have the time or whatever. I'm wondering how that morale and employee cuts have actually, other than reducing payroll, which clearly worked, but I'm not even sure, because now a lot of people are outsourcing a lot of jobs that were in-house are now being outsourced, so I don't.
How is doing less affected or the overall Cornell experience for our students is really the big question.
Yeah.
If we have done less, we're doing less, and we'll continue probably even to do more, or cut even more. That's really my main concern. And how do we measure that? How is that? When you have students that are coming in and didn't know any different, how is that measured? Do we just go by these polls that people fill out in the USA and say, oh, well, Cornell's up, Cornell's down, and that's it, and that's the end of it? When you've had employees that have been here a very long time, I think there's a big sense of pride that they had with the job that was being done, and now, like you said, the morale has changed.
So I think this is the way that we have, you know, rather than giving David a prescribed question, you know, when he says what's going on, I think you just throw that out there, and that kind of gets this discussion going, rather than just giving 10 questions that.
We increased class size significantly, cut the staff who's going to be instructing them, but it looks to me like all of a sudden there's this trend of huge hiring of accounting people who aren't really involved in teaching the students. So I'm trying to figure out how that's, you know.
So it looks like we've got some things that people will throw out there. No, I mean, that's what I wanted to, I just don't want it to come and then it'd be really quiet.
Just
so.
Don't forget them on the 15th.
I think we should ask that.
Well, now they have
more.
So, Alan Mittman mentioned a number of weeks ago that Mary Opperman had rifled through all the open-ended responses for the engagement survey, and that he thought that might be something she would be interested in for the EA survey. Is there any interest in having an examination of the EA survey results for David and Mary?
We can ask them. We can ask them if they want to take a look at them.
If not, I don't think that they feel.
Yeah, I mean, they'll both be here, so we can. Yeah, I mean, we can toss out the question, or I can email Mary in advance and even ask her that. I mean, I think it's a fair question to ask her. Bridget?
I just got something. I've been doing a lot of college visits lately because of my daughter. And when I'm on these visits, the tour guides and people in admissions and that are asking where you're from and different things like that. And it's been brought up that I work at Cornell. Well, several times I have heard from a lot of different people that Cornell now has a poor reputation, a negative reputation, because of the suicides and all the different times that we've been in the news on the negative and all of that.
Well, come on, we were on Parenthood, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Even if it's a Parenthood premiere with all kids jumping off prison.
So maybe that addresses how are we as a university working on our brand?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would drive. I won't be there, but I'd be curious, what are we doing on the PR front? I didn't mean to take over, but I think what you're driving at is what's our perception versus reality in our brand. Yeah.
That's good. The issue is how do the employees fit into that, and what can we be doing to help facilitate some positive brand messaging?
Right.
Or how can we get employees to be happier about being advocates for the brand, rather than I work at Cornell, they just did these downsizing cuts, things like that, and you know, people aren't happy.
How do we educate our employees also that just because it's been in the news and it's been a lot of negativity, the numbers aren't really there to prove that?
Well, and that's what my comment has been to these people. I'm like, well, we really wouldn't know it with the way our enrollment rates have been, the way our enrollment rates have skyrocketed and things like that. It doesn't really reflect that, but I'm just wondering what we're doing, as Joe mentioned, about branding and that. And
good. Let's bring all those to the table. Looks like we'll have a good discussion. I know, Joe, you said you can't be there.
I won't be in town.
Will most other, or is most everyone planning on being there Monday the 15th? Excellent. Yes, I will. I will. And then one last thing. We have the president's address next Tuesday. So is everybody planning on being there for that?
Yeah, do we know what we're polling?
So Al forwarded the polling to Eric and I to kind of look at, but he did a nice job putting together a little spreadsheet, so we'll have that. And maybe, Al, when you're done with it, if you can just pass it around to the EA group. Yeah, to the listserv, what folks will check off.
How much early should they get there?
I would say people, for the most part, want to be there by 2012. Does that sound right?
Even 11:30, I would say, because people start arriving.
Yeah, I just don't want to have 20 people there and with nothing to do. So
I told Tiny that they could deliver the sandwiches at 11:30.
So I'll send out an email and you could be there at 11:30 and we could have some folks at 11:30 and some people come in a little bit after that kind of thing. So I realize it is a big chunk of time for folks. I need someone. Is anybody interested in picking up the apples on, when was it, Amy? When do we have to pick them up? Monday morning?
Between 8 and 8:30.
On
Tuesday morning.
Tuesday morning. Anyone want to?
Last year, I think I did.
You're going to get them? Okay. Thank you, Jeannie.
What time? I'm sorry. I was just thinking of something else.
She volunteered to get them from the orchard.
Pick up apples
to
and
Bailey.
Bring them.
At what time? So we're ready.
Oh, well, last year, you were gone. No one was there. I just tucked them in the door off the loading dock as two men watched me struggle with my heavy boxes of apples.
She's not bitter about that.
No.
What time are you
going? If I can pick them up, what time is it early?
Between 8 and 8:30.
I'll pick them up at 8. I'll be there by 8:20.
Okay. I won't be there again.
So I'll put them inside the back door, and they'll make faces at those men again. They were not part of Bailey. They were they're still like, okay, pick up apples. Can do. And then, okay, did you have another thing?
Nope.
Okay, so because I'm lucky enough to be in facilities, I have I have a connection to the tech campus. I'm not working on it as part of a project, but I can arrange for, and I can take that on to arrange for some kind of presentation that's not from Scorton, but from people who are working directly on it out of our department. And we are the section managers for facilities engineering. We are having a class trip to the tech site next week, so whatever I can gather, even if it's just a slideshow, then we can bring that too.
Okay.
So we'll work to get something. So it'd be, he can give you the one man who's working, who's in my department, who's working on the whole site development. He's working with it. He can tell you how it's set up with the people who are in management down there and how they're working with the Cornell team. He can tell you about the general plan of how it's being developed. It has some images. They're in early schematic design of what it might be looking like and give a whole big update.
Great.
So I can try to set that up.
Do folks want that? Do we want to have that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can't tell you anything about finances and how much money will go there from here, but can tell you just about that kind of development.
Okay.
I don't know how to approach this, Tanya, but the fledgling committee at the veterinary college, is anyone opposed to me volunteering to be the go-between between EA and the veterinary college?
Not at all.
Okay.
Give me a discount.
No, but I'll try to have them put some advantage or advantage into that care option.
Oh, that would be awesome.
As long as they're released from liability.
So quickly, did we decide on listening to minutes last time? The January 2nd, 2013 meeting, did we officially cancel it? Is it still showing active here?
Amy said an old list.
Yep.
So we're not having a January 2nd meeting.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Yeah.
We're at time.
Yeah. I move that we adjourn.
Thank you, guys.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.